Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Welcome, everybody. Today's show, we're excited to have Steve Piacenti back on our show. Steve, if this is your first time listening to us and having Steve's segments on our show, Steve is a former journalist turned life coach. He is certified by the International Coach Federation, very important, owner of Next Phase Life Coaching. And he's also the director of training at the Communication Center in Washington, D.C. He's the author of award-winning author of three novels, Pretender, Bella, and Bootlicker. And his latest book is Your New Fighting Stance, Good Enough Isn't and You Know It. We like that tagline. Everybody, yep. Keep up with Steve at stevepiacenti.com. You can also hear his interviews on, I have to just go to blendradioandtv.com. But welcome back, Steve. How are you doing?
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Nancy. Great to be with you again.
Hey, good to have you on the show. You know, I think this is such a crazy year. And I think, you know, everyone needs life coaches because, and you know, you look at all the change that's happened through COVID. When we get into seasons, especially spring, people start to, you know, get that little bit of excitement under their wings and feel a little bit more that there's possibilities out there, feel a little bit more positive, I think. It's a positive season coming out of winter.
Yes.
And so much has changed with COVID. Things are opening up and could fluctuate backwards again. People have changed jobs, changed careers, maybe need to change careers. So it's a whirlwind of change out there. And I know you just wrote a great article up on LinkedIn. It's note to sports parents, what they're really learning on the field of play. And your article really touches on cornerstones we can all use to navigate through these crazy times. So I'm excited for people to read that.
Well, thanks, Lisa. That article actually was born out of an experience I was lucky enough to have. I started doing some life coaching with some very elite junior tennis players in Maryland, which is my state where I live. And I realized that, you know, you look at these kids and they were so proficient on the court, forehands, backhands, serves, every part of it. And then you take the racket out of their hands and you start talking with them. And, you know, the expectation is something like, well, they'll be good at everything else as they are at tennis. And then all of a sudden you realize that they're kids. And so, what we realize is that they're kind of operating in a bubble. And I kind of liken it to what we've all been going through over the past year. We're all living in kind of a bubble. And so I think it's important at times to look beyond it and you know, not get stuck inside.
Yeah, exactly. And these lessons, you know, you talk about responsibility and consistency, stability, leadership, communication, time management, critical thinking, capability, and capacity. I want to kind of start with critical thinking because a lot of people that maybe have been quarantined at home, going through change, that's a huge component, really, is critical thinking. And a lot of times we don't get time to stop and actually think.
Yeah, and I left this part out of my little story, but my wife and I had three kids who wound up playing college tennis themselves. And so what I came to realize after a lot of years is that all the things that they learned in their sport, and this would really be for any sport, transcend that sport. And so what are they learning when they're actually on the court or the field or the state in the, you know, out there on the soccer field? They're learning things like critical thinking. They're learning how to manage their time because they have to juggle. At that point, they are juggling academics and their commitment to the team. But later on, that skill set comes in very handy when, for instance, we're stuck at home due to COVID and we have, you know, we're stuck, but we also have an opportunity, if you want to look at it that way, to think about what we've been doing and if there's a way to change it to to arrive at a life that's more rewarding, more fulfilling.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of time to reflect that we didn't have before. You know, we get all hustle and busy, and even just driving to and from work takes a good portion of a lot of people's day.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Now, that, for me, was 2 hours. Into Washington, D.C., an hour out. And so the mistake that I, well, not a mistake, but the way I have found with a lot of the clients that I work with, what they're actually doing is creating a longer work day. So there's 2 hours less commute, 2 hours more in front of the computer. And that's not necessarily healthy in my view. So maybe we can take that extra time, and a lot of people have done this, and try to think of, as I say, am I really happy with my situation? And is this the way I want it going, or go back to that life once the COVID cloud lifts?
Yeah, it's important to take time out. Just even, you know, we always talk about taking a walk out of nature and photography, like, you know, your awesome photography, doing things like that to kind of jolt you out of that. I think just even if you just go sit outside and have a glass of wine, you know, it's like just kind of to slip into a, it helps you move past the monkey mind chatter to get to the actual critical thinking. And with critical thinking, to me, I think you've got to have pen and paper in hand or something to kind of, because we can, it's a thing where we think, oh, I'm in the car, so I'm doing my critical thinking in the car driving to work, right? But you're not really 100% invested in those thoughts because you're still having to watch that you don't get into an accident, you know?
Exactly.
So, and you're thinking, you know, I use it a lot of times to think about, okay, what am I doing next? Very visualization kind of person. But with, and critical thinking to me is very visual. Everyone's different. But any tips on how to use critical thinking, how to get there, to get to that clear point, and then to actually make it work, be constructive with it. You know what I mean?
Well, let me, I'll answer that question, but first let me make a comment about what you just said, because it reminds me very much of, as a, as an author, as a writer, you'll think of, maybe it's on the subway ride downtown, or in the car, or just taking a walk, and a great line of dialogue or a great plot line shift will occur to you. And man, if you don't write it down, it disappears into the ether. And when you try to remember it, just not there.
Yeah.
It's just not there. So I agree with you. And I'll remind everybody, every phone has a notes app of some sort where if you just jot down a couple of words, you'll be able to remember it later on. But I do think that's a great way to begin with the critical thinking by jotting down ideas as they occur to you and seeing later on if they're worth pursuing. Some people journal, some people do it in their notes app. It doesn't really matter as long as you don't let it become like a fleeting thought that seems like great at the moment, but then you never think, revisit it or act on it later on.
Is that something you do as a life coach? Is, you know, I know over the conversations over the last few years, we've talked about life coaching and what it is and the importance of being certified and studying it. But it's not like as a life coach, you're not telling people what to do. Part of being a life coach is kind of getting them to the critical thinking point, isn't it? In a way, like you're helping people get to thinking.
Well, as you mentioned, I do two different things. I'm a communications consultant for a company called the Communications Center, and then I'm also a life coach. And, I mean, well, what's the difference between a consultant and a life coach? And the way I explain it is this. If, as a consultant, you ask me the quickest way from A to D, I will tell you what, in my opinion, is the quickest way to get there. If as a life coach you ask me, I will say for how to get from A to D, I will say, well, what do you think is the quickest way? And then we'll discuss your ideas, and then we'll see what the obstacles are, and then we'll talk about how to get those obstacles out of the way or go around them. So essentially, it's the difference between a map and a compass.
Mm. I like that. I like that mm-hmm. a lot. So critical thinking is part, and then you talk about the beginning in your article. You talk about responsibility and consistency, and the showing up, being fully present. I think that's something important. And going back to what you're saying, where you've got clients that maybe don't have the 2-hour commute, but now they're adding 2 hours in front of the computer. So in a way, that you may think you're showing up and doing better, but less is more, right? And so there's a responsibility and a consistency, a responsibility to ourselves, to show up for ourselves, and then have some kind of consistency with showing up for yourself, not just your boss. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Well, I have a couple of thoughts about this. And one of them is first a caveat that I get everyone has got virtual exhaustion. Or Zoom fatigue, mm. whatever you want to call it. Everybody's just
zoomed out.
With we are zoomed out. And so here's the thing. A lot of times what I am finding in different organizations is that people are getting online for, say, a staff meeting and choosing to keep the video off. And so in one way, this makes life more comfortable. We don't have to get dressed. Maybe the guys don't have to shave. Maybe you can be more casual about it. On the other hand, at mm-hmm. some point during the year, most people have a performance review. And so my thought is, how do you want to be remembered during that performance review? As a disembodied voice
yeah.
or as someone who showed up every time, looking good, sounding good, contributing, and as you say, being fully present?
Mm. You know, I think dressing properly has a lot to do with how you conduct yourself. And so the idea that you can hide and not have the video button on the one hand, yeah, I get that that's easy, but part of getting ready for some kind of interaction with other people, a meeting or whatever, going to a classroom or whatever, is taking time to make sure that you are presentable. So, I feel like taking the Zoom, like the video Zoom thing off, mm-hmm. might make you not be as, present as you would have been had you got dressed properly. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But I'll add this. And I can't point to any scientific research that backs me up, but I mm-hmm. think we would pretty much agree that if you take care of yourself, dress right, for guys, shave, just get yourself ready. It stimulates a different feeling in you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you probably will present better because of that.
Yeah.
So that's, I really do believe that. And so, I never go online without, I early in COVID, I established a pretty good routine about getting out for a walk every morning, just breathing in some fresh air, making sure to shave and get dressed. I mean, I'm not dressing like I would dress to go downtown, but wearing a dress shirt, maybe without a tie, and pants instead of, some people wear shorts because you can't see them on the screen. But and I think what inside reflects what you bring outside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same feeling I had when Nancy had to cut my hair during COVID. I just lopped that stuff off, man, because it was driving me nuts. And I'm like, and all of a sudden I'm like, dude, man, now I'm back. It's a vote of confidence. And for some women, it's, hey, I got a new pair of red shoes. Watch out. So everybody's got a thing, but it is about, I feel like responsibility should be part of a routine. And it's the same thing as brushing your twice a day, It's like,
mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And you feel better, trust me, if you do. The other part, too, about, showing up and being present, you talk about stability and competition and understanding that you're not always going to win. And mm-hmm. that part can be very difficult for people, especially in a new career or something you've done for a long time. And this is where sometimes we get very complacent in our zone where we are on the top, right? We've done so well over the years. We're very established that we start to fall down because I don't know, I don't want to say we become a know-it-all, but we've become that, you know, where we aren't being aware of change, like something like COVID coming. The tourism industry, I mean, it is responsible tourism industry. That, mm-hmm. you know, that is something that is not the same as a town that was the lumber town, and then the lumber company moved away and the town went dead. Responsible tourism mm-hmm. is something that rarely gets affected unless it's a natural disaster, something like COVID or hurricanes, and people build back up. But COVID really, really affected it. And so if you've always been doing well, you start to put blinders on, realizing that there's always something, there's a shark in the water somewhere. And then that could be catastrophic if you've always been sitting at the top. You can fall really hard if you haven't had some losses along the way, if you haven't had criticism even. You've got to have criticism, otherwise you mm-hmm. can't handle the criticism to move forward. And that's where I think maybe a lot of people are also sitting during COVID, is a huge shock and painful to the system.
Well, you know, and very closely related to that are people who have just kind of become complacent. And, you know, this is where that business about good enough isn't and you know it really comes into play. But for that to come into play, you have to think about it and really decide whether this is good enough, this is all you're going to do and you're happy with it, or is there something beyond good enough? Now, I'm gonna quickly say and acknowledge that COVID has hit people in different ways, and some people have been, you know, really devastated by this terrible illness. And, you know, I mentioned offline that a guy wrote on my Instagram account that for many of us coping with life now, good enough is good enough. And I totally get that. The one thing I would say, though, is that at some point we will emerge on the other side of this, and that's when I think the self-audit has to take place. Otherwise, you wind up 5 years, 10 years down the road doing the same old, and are vaguely unhappy about something, can't quite put your finger on it, and I would say it traces back to never questioning. You know, never questioning those assumptions that we just believe in blindly. The actor Alan Alda said those assumptions are windows on the world. We need to scrub them off every once in a while, otherwise the light doesn't get in.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We have to. I mean, no matter what level you're at in your company, whether you're the owner, you have to keep just doing that self-audit. I think it's important. And as a business owner, you need to do a business audit too, not just your mm-hmm. personal audit. But if you're only doing your business audit and not doing a personal audit, then uh-oh. They're tied. They're connected. They're very, very connected.
You know, when I was painting, I would paint a picture, and the process of painting to me was the fun part. But when I would finish the picture for about 2 or 3 hours, I'd like, wow, look at that, was pretty cool. And then the next day, I wish I had changed this over there, and I really don't like what I did over there. And then 3 days down the road, I was like, oh, I think I need to get rid of this painting or try it a different way. And so that continual looking at the painting and seeing something I thought was good enough at the moment down the road became an irritation to me. And then someone else would look at the painting and see something completely different, and not even notice the things that I felt were mistakes, unless it was another artist who was like, oh, yeah, look what you did over here, ha-ha.
You know, you know, it's a great analogy because if you think of, you know, I'll use my own, any writing product that you do, from an email to a novel, you never settle for the first draft, right? Mm. You always go back. If most people I'm talking about, at least, some people mm-hmm. just dash something off and they're done with it. But for most thoughtful people, it's not the first draft, or even the second, third, or fourth. Sometimes it's not until the 10th draft that you feel that it's exactly right. And I think that's what you're talking about with the painting, mm-hmm. that we just settle too quickly. And I don't know why that is, but maybe it has something to do with the world we live in now where everything is so, you know, the instant gratification. I remember, and if you guys probably do too, you know, the days of when you wrote an angry letter and then put it in the desk overnight, reread it in the morning before you put it in the mailbox.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that kind of thinking is mostly gone these days.
Well,
because
instant
it's so
emails.
Easy to hit return and send.
Yeah. And boy, sometimes you really wish you hadn't.
Well, yeah, you know, we just watched a friend just totally annihilate a huge portion of her business just over a terrible email mistake that she made.
Yes.
And it is affecting her business like you would not believe.
Big time.
And especially in this day where we're going through with COVID, you can't really afford to do that. She certainly can't. And it's just her communication. Communication is everything. And even like when we talk about critical thinking and self-audit, that's communication with yourself. And the communication we do, I think this brings up such a huge deal. People on, I mean, look at the wars on social media, the anger that is out there. And that is, you're exactly right about it. I remember Nancy telling me, like, go write it down, number one, because if you're angry with something, go write it down. Don't just, you know, yell and scream or kick your feet as a kid. Or, you know, don't just, you know, vent on me. You can vent, but if you really want to vent, go write it down. And exactly, leave it until the next morning before you do anything. Breathe. Breathe is a really good thing. But the communication, I just watched this lady just absolutely annihilate her business just because she's stressed out and uptight. And she took it out on the wrong people at the wrong time. And it is irreversible, the damage she has done without really...
Can I share my favorite email tip? This is my favorite email tip. How many times have any of us, maybe not to that catastrophic extent that you just described, but how many times have we all written an email, proofread it, the desk, got a cup of coffee, maybe went outside, came back, read it again, all looked fine, maybe even took another break, came back, everything looked perfect. And then you send it, and then you read it, and then you realize either there was a mistake in it or this is an email I shouldn't have sent.
Yeah.
All right? It's happened to everybody.
Yeah,
so here's my tip, or my at least my theory. My theory is that that last time that you read it is the first time you're reading it as the reader instead of as the writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so your last edit should always be putting yourself in the seat of the reader that you're sending it to, and you will see whatever you have written in a different light. That's my favorite tip on email.
Yeah, you could send it to yourself.
You could do that too.
Just send it to yourself and read it the next day.
And read it in the, you see, this is what I like
sometimes
to do, even for proofreading. For proofreading, you know, you can do all the, you know, algorithm proofreading stuff that you want, but, and I have, you know, because we lived in different countries, I still go backwards, you know, and or forwards. It depends what day it is. And the way I get through it is I read it in different accents out loud. So,
that's interesting. It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. But then that's where my grammar could get twirled around. So if I'm doing British, I'm going back to writing like, you know, where, when we lived in England or South Africa, you know. So it's. But to me, if you read it out loud and you put it in an accent, now you've really put yourself out of yourself. And if you know the person and you've talked to them, try and do their accent. And as they're that's how you could do it out loud or have their accent in your head. Just really visualize that person and think about it. And when you do that, you actually start to understand the person a little bit more. You are really trying to put your feet in their shoes, even if you don't want to put your feet in their shoes. You may not want to. But, I think this is the communication, you know, when you're stressed out, breathe, man. I think, you know, people are really stressed. Some are excitable. Some are profiting and doing really well. Everybody's so different right now. And we're not going to be exactly the same as before. No way. No way, Jose.
Right.
It's not going to be the same. Mm-mm.
Well, that fear of a pandemic is always going to be something that lingers. And it's going to be a major thing for people who live through it, that it's going to be a major thing of part of their history. And they're going to talk about it to their kids and their grandkids. You know, and it's going to go down in history as one of the most troubling of times worldwide. Not, you know, it's almost like a world war in a sense.
It's, yeah, I mean, you would think that it's the common enemy and that we would all rally together to defeat it. I have not seen that.
See, now I thought, because I was told, Lisa, that as a kind of a joke, you know, that the only time everybody will get along is if aliens come down from space and they start attacking everybody equally around the world, then the world will get along in order to fight one common enemy. But now I'm wondering if that even that would do it.
Listen, the aliens are the peacekeepers. The little green men are cool.
See, you don't even know that they're green. They might be red.
I know, but I want to go to you on this because at the same time, like, okay, we're talking about the pandemic is really catastrophic. And during this pandemic year, even with our magazines, as we're going to publish, a town where we cover went through wildfires. We went through a number of communities we cover went through wildfires and almost wiped out an entire wine region. I mean, it was devastating. Hurricanes. We went through 3 hurricanes last year.
Yeah.
Personally. Wow. Just driving, skirting them, sat a dog during a hurricane, took care of the house, we were okay. But, you know, through climate change, we are going through change. And it's not just the disasters of pandemics. We are going through natural disasters. So my point on this is not to get anybody down, but to realize this is really a new world that we're living in. We're going to have to make changes. We are going to have to work together through change.
Yep.
We are going to have to try new things. I think what's really great with what you're doing, Steve, is that you're getting people stronger in their core to be resilient, to be able to understand who they are. So when things happen, it's not panic. It is, what can I do? How can I do it? Who can I work with? And that is the same for business. It's just... We are in this, the change thing that's the way it is. And political change, all of that.
Right.
So it's about what can we do? And I think that's what's great with what your article and what you're doing as a life coach is getting us stronger.
Thanks. And you both put your finger on this, and it's really true. I would venture to say that if the aliens ever land, it will also be the single biggest issue, and that is effective communication. The quote that I like on this one is from George Bernard Shaw, who said the single biggest problem with communication is the illusion that it has occurred. Meaning that we think we're communicating, but people on the receiving end may not get what you're saying. And so once again, we need to do a self-audit to see if what we're saying is clear, if it is concise, if it is understandable, if it is relatable. So all of those things are really so important.
You know, this reminds me, I probably have said this before with you, but I took Lisa when she was very young to a fair, and she was in the stroller the whole time. And I thought I was introducing her to all these wonderful things that she had never seen before, and she was exhausted by the end of the day, as I was. After, like, what did you like the best? What did you see that you liked the best? And she said all she saw was people's knees. I was just like, oh, my gosh, what have I done? You know, just she was at a whole different perspective. And I never got down to see what she was seeing.
Yeah. Well, that's another great metaphor. There's the Disney movie Pocahontas, and in that movie there is a song called Colors of the Wind, and I use this a lot because I think it's really true, and it's what you just said, that when you walk the footsteps of a stranger, you learn things you never knew. And that's to me, that's the key, because if you can put yourself in, look at things from the other person's perspective, I think there'd be a lot more understanding and acknowledgement of each other's positions going on.
Mm-hmm. And that would be a better leader if you did that. You know, as leadership now, you know, leadership has changed. Leadership used to be, I'm the boss, do as I say, don't ask, you know. Now, leaders are understanding to, number one, if you're hiring a team, hire people that are smarter or have more ideas, not necessarily smarter, but you know what I mean? If someone's a brainiac on something that you aren't, because you can't be everything, hire them, learn from them, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, we're hearing the word team now, which I don't think team was being used 10 years ago, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the culture is changing, hopefully, but leadership is, as a leader, you do need to have that communication and you do need to be able to understand everybody on the other side, you know, and walk in other people's shoes.
And what you're talking about there, I would couch as perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And to come full circle with my tennis boys that I did life coaching, you know, that was what I emphasized. I didn't say one word about forehands or backhands. What I was saying, was talking to them about was you know, getting them to understand what they were learning on the court transcended the court, that they were learning all these things that we were talking about, responsibility, consistency, time management, communication and critical thinking and what they were capable of when things were not going their way. And to be able to articulate that without a racket in their hands. That's where I was going with these kids.
Mm.
And you know, I think these are lessons if you learn, the sooner you learn them, the better you can deploy them later on in college, in the job market, as parents and members of the community.
I want to touch on time management. You know, Bobby DePorter in the Eight Keys of Excellence, the eighth key of excellence is balance, which means you're incorporating all keys of excellence and you're in the zone. You're in that flow. You love what you're doing. You know, it's like you can't get enough of it. You know what I mean? You're so happy and you're in that zone. And I'm in a Facebook group and for digital thinkers and creatives and all that good stuff. And the question was about time management, especially because we talk about screen time and Zoom burnout and all of that stuff, time management. And one person, and as an entrepreneur, if you don't enjoy what you're doing, you are going to burn out fast. But one guy just turns around and says, if you're doing what you like to do, then time management is BS. Being as polite as I can, what his post was. But I was thinking about this going, yeah, because, you know, you've got to take care of yourself. So if you are in line with your profession or your business, gather. And because, you know, it's like COVID wasn't on a schedule. It just happened.
No. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, things happen that will derail your schedule. We know that from travel.
Oh,
we
sure.
always try add in 4 to 5 hours, depending, because we know we're going to get derailed and detoured no matter what we do as we travel.
Yeah.
It is a given.
It's a given.
We know change is going to happen. We know it's going to happen. So that's a constant. Talk about consistency, you know. So time management, I mean, I remember going to, you know, courses and studying, and they're all going, okay, you need to schedule out 20 minutes for your break. You need to have this much time before you go to sleep. I mean, can we overdo it on that, on scheduling ourselves?
Yeah. Well, here's the way I would answer it. As a life coach, one of the things that I ask my clients to do is something called a values assessment. So this is a worksheet that has probably 30 to 40 values. So imagine those values listed on the left, and they would include things like accomplishment, achievement, adventure, altruism, beauty, communication, creativity, family, freedom, friendship, humor, integrity, intimacy, physical appearance. So then the next category is you rate those values on a scale of 1 to 10. In other words, if it's worth a lot to you, that particular value, it means a lot to you, you give it a 10. And if it means less, you go in descending order. But then the column on the right, and this is where it gets interesting, is what we call the action rating. So maybe you value achievement at 10, but you only give yourself a 7. Or maybe you value friendship at 10, and you only give yourself a 5. And so this is where we get to that question about putting all the eggs in one basket. And this is where, you know, if your guy cares only about his work, then fine. I'd say time management is BS for him. I think for most people, they have a lot of different things that they value. And sure. You can't achieve all of those things or even a realistic or not realistic, but a satisfactory rating on the other categories if all you're doing is the work. So does that make sense?
Absolutely. I can say it with us. Like, you know, we've decided to travel the country full time. You know, we've done it twice now in this country on the same tour, name change, had to stop in between because we had to revamp things so we knew. And if we ever have to do that again, we will. But we did have to put all our eggs in one basket. However, we have this incredible balance of if you're always at the computer working, you're not traveling and getting the new content and making the connections and not enjoying yourself. Like for us, you know, we have these times where we're off in the park and we're hiking, we're, you know, having our picnics, we're communing with nature. And those are our days off where we remember it's not just a day off. It's something, it's like a reinvestment. It's you can't even put money next to it. It's a reinvestment of why we do what we do, because we feel such joy that you want other people to feel that joy. So it's like you get to that balance of, okay, really for us to, it's a waste of time to drive back and forth home. It is a complete waste of time, you know, but now we pet sit in between. So now we feel like we're at home. So you find these things that, exactly like you're saying, it is about your values and your, what brings you joy. I think we put joy as an underrated thing. We forget that we can have it.
And I find also that sometimes people unknowingly put blinders on themselves. And so they become laser focused on the one thing that they're working on, like your guy that you mentioned earlier, and is not even thinking about those other values. And that's why I believe it's important to step back once in a while and really think about, am I happy? Is this fulfilling for me? Is there something I'm not doing that would make me happier, or something if I added it to the mix would make me feel more well-rounded? And if you got the blinders on, you can't do that.
Exactly, and that's why we're the blend.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, we say variety is the spice that brings quality to life, because if all you're doing is one thing, you're going to dig a rut eventually.
And so many people criticize the idea of a magazine that had several different topics instead of like just being a food magazine or being just a nature magazine. They really had a problem with the concept of a little bit of everything, of the variety that but when we sat down to do this, we were like, oh, but if we just do nature, then we're going to miss history. And if, you know, we love history. So, and then it was like, well, we also like art, but we also love this. And eventually we just said, if we're going to do a magazine and we want to stick to it and make it what we want it, it's going to have to be a variety magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be the only way that we could maintain it and be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to inspire people to do new things. And that's when you have your blinders on, you tend to not do new things. And therefore, you're not really growing, right, as an individual.
Mm-hmm. Right. So once again, to bring it back to the boys that I coached, who play tennis, you know, my greatest concern for them, because they're beautiful kids, really smart, really thoughtful, and of course great junior tennis players. But my greatest fear would be that they wind up in a college university where they play on a team, and it's a very demanding schedule, and there's a lot of pressure on them. And then they get out and they're not quite good enough to be pros, and they haven't invested in whatever else they could turn into a career, and they find themselves lost and in a hard place, nowhere to go. So that was my intention. Whenever I coach somebody that young, they've got their tennis coaches to deal with all the strokes that they have to master. But my concern is going to be what else we need to work on so that it's a more well-rounded existence.
I like that. What's important, I think, of athletes that, it's a short-term career, in regards to there's an aging point where you stop and you need to have other things in your basket of life, that you're going to go to your next.
And I'll venture to say that you're thinking of the athletes who have made it and who have some money. But what about the vast majority who are really, really, really good, but not quite good enough, and they never make the pros, they never get that big paycheck? What do they do?
Well, and some sports really don't have the big money. Like my brother was the California State Gymnast Champion. And that's what he wanted to do. That's what he focused on. And he was really good at it. And then he found out that at the time he was doing, there really wasn't any money in it. It wasn't like being a football star or a heavyweight boxer or something like that. There just really wasn't any money in it. So he then started teaching others. And then he ended up making gymnastic equipment. Because
probably a very far thought from what he expected when he was competing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's important. But that's the lessons to learn. How many people that's what I think is so important about when you're talking about the youth too. Like I almost feel like, I know there's counselors and everything for college, but like when kids are going into college and the expense invested in college, the expense they have to pay or their parents or juggling jobs, which I think it's good to haul, and really get knee deep into something you think you're into. But there's a lot of kids that end up in college. You will go, you're the first kid doing this. And maybe they're studying the wrong thing or haven't done that self audit. I think these self audits should really start at a very young age. And I mean, beyond what the schools do where do you want to pick cherries or an apple? Kind of thing. I mean, beyond that,
you're talking about those tests. Would you rather work outside or work at a desk?
And then everything is other.
Well, I think that if a kid expresses a lot of interest and ability in a sport or several sports, they should certainly be allowed and encouraged to pursue it. For sure.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yes.
Let's see where the heck it goes. But by the same token, you have to realize that I think it's important to have the conversation every once in a while, in addition to learning how to field the baseball, kick a soccer ball, or hit an ace on the tennis court. What are you learning besides that? And that's the whole point of this post. This is what I'm talking about. And I'm really hopeful that in addition to the athletes themselves, more important, the parents of these kids will realize it, because I find too often that the parents are trying to live the glory days through their kids. For me, the parents should provide, as it says, unconditional love, opportunity, and support. But leave the coaching to the coaches. Leave the coaching to the coaches.
Yeah. How many times do you go see like a little league and like the parents
oh my
are
God.
Out there?
Every year.
And then they're talk about fights on social media. There are fights out there on the court or the athletic
it's like,
field or whatever
really?
It is. Man, they get intense about it. It's crazy.
Every year we see something on the news about some mom or dad getting in a fight with the umpire or the referee.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
For the kid, they're
but
like, oh,
sad.
Mom, why do you have to do that?
Yeah.
Oh, it's terrible.
Like,
yeah.
Sad.
It's embarrassing to the kid. Yes. But then the kid's going to have to learn something from that. I mean, no matter what, whatever negative stuff happens, whatever, if it's embarrassing, whatever it is, you're going to have to learn from that, and it is going to make you stronger, you know. You just don't need a lot of it all the time. But I think there's – and there's something good about letting a kid do something on their own, to have their – let their legs be strong. And even if they don't do well at it, let them get there, you know. There are so many parents I do see that really coddle to a point of, how is the kid ever going to – you know, make their own meal when they, you know, get their own place.
Well,
you know what I mean?
I heard it. Yeah, absolutely. And I heard an interesting thing about Legos the other day. Some guy was talking about Legos, and he was saying that Legos are great. You follow the instructions, you make the thing. But there's a lot to be said for giving the kid a Lego set without the instructions and seeing what they come up with.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's cool. And we can learn from kids. I think kids...
Yeah.
You know, we don't spend a lot of time around kids because we don't have them. But, you know, when we're with friends with kids and, you know, I'm always amazed, like, you know, because I have to go, okay, kids, like, how do you act around kids? Just be yourself, you know. And I don't have that much of engagement with them, really. And then when, like, especially little ones, I'm like, okay. But then you start to really watch them and how they create.
Funny.
And remember, we used to build forts as kids and act things out. And I think that's the coolest thing to watch kids, because you do see creativity. You start to see who wants – it's like, you know, what's it, the Lord of the Flies. I'm going to be the leader. You're the feather people. You know, you see them do this. It's like they play mini business right there as little kids, like who's going to do what task and, oh, you messed that up. You're not supposed to say this. And but you watch them create and I think it's exciting as adults watching that. We learn from kids. There's always something because they're fresh. They're not jaded yet. They haven't been told, no, you know, that's not the way the world does it. They're so fresh with things that, and we start to say, and oh, we take no as a real thing, you know.
They're fresh and they're uncensored. I'll share that. You know, we now have grandchildren, and I have one granddaughter. The one who lives in Asheville, coincidentally, she and I have a game that we play. And what she does is she'll start a story and her mom, my daughter, will record it. And she'll send me, you know, the 10-second snippet. And it's my job to add on to the story. Then
oh, cool.
we go back and forth. Each of us add a piece of the story. And
cool.
she comes up.
That's
she
cool.
comes up with some amazing things that are really just so creative.
That's
and by
cool.
the way, she's four.
Oh,
and
I,
half.
Love that. I love that. I love
that.
I think kids are cool. And doing that, I mean, that's prompting creativity. Talk about critical thinking. And there's like unlimited possibilities. Kids are like the walking, anything is possible. You know, it's like if I want to eat Cheetos on the moon, I can. You know, whatever it is. It's so cool. It's so cool. Steve, it is always such a pleasure having you on the show. And just everyone again, Steve, PSNT.com is the website. The book, Your New Fighting Stance, Good Enough Isn't, and You Know It. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Because even when that dude, you know, posted that on your Instagram, you know later he's thinking about it. You know. At 2 in the morning, he's having a war with himself right now. And eventually, he's going to have to burst out of it. Because I think we do have our own wars before we burst out of it, you know?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
So I think it's a good thing. You made impact there. But also, read Steve's article. We'll post this up, the link and everything. It's on LinkedIn. And it is called Note to Sports Parents, What They're Really Learning on the Field of Play. So check that out. We always love to close with music, and this song is called Stepping Stones. It is from the album When the Rain Falls by Kimia Penton, and you can keep up with her at kimiapmusic.com. So thanks so much, Steve.
Lisa and Nancy, great talking with you again, and have a great spring until we meet again.
Alrighty. Absolutely. We'll have more parties, too. We love those parties.
Sounds
all right.
Good.
Thanks. Here it is, Stepping Stones. Don't forget, keep up with us at BigBlendRadio.com. Take care.
Bye-bye.
My first steps were a celebration. Mom and Dad watching me grow. With every orbit of the sun, there's much more I got to know. As the seasons changed and I was fully grown, I was more than made by the lovely soul. Mom and Dad's story didn't always make sense. They came from a different time with different pains, but the courage that I stand on is the example that they gave. My first stepping stone was a life they led. Out to the city on my own, working at the corner office on the 21st floor, thinking how far I come and where I could go, taking in the whole world, but I'm missing home. The road I tried for a different time, a better place. If I was building bridges, if I built a fence, Mom and Dad's wisdom was my one defense. If the noise in the world drowned out the voice in my head, I find my way home to hear the words they say. Those familiar ones, the laughter and tears wash away my fears. Mom and Dad's story didn't always make sense. They came from a from the lives they live.